sitting here in the prayer center for a while and listening to Pastor Dave's tapes, I remember I was asking him a question one day. I've been starting to listen to the Born Again Trail and years ago, and I had him in the car. I was driving him somewhere, and I was asking him questions about the Spirit, and he was trying to tell me what he'd been teaching about for years on the Born Again Trail. I've been listening to him, but all of a sudden it hit me what he was talking about. And I had a problem sometimes listening to Pastor Dave's tapes, messages, because there was a accountability to them. You know, I asked God one time, why is it I have so few real friends? You know, you can sit down with one person and talk to him for 3 hours and really not talk about anything. It's just 3 hours gone. You know, I'm the type where I like to connect, you know, where I can talk to you. I haven't seen you for 3 months, but if I talk to you for 5 minutes, we connected. That's what's important to me. And I said, Father, why is it that we have so few people that stay with us or are close to us, you know? And because there's friends on the outside, but there's real friends, you know. And he began just to instruct me about how this walk, there's accountability to it. There's maturity with it. In other words, the people who are my friends, there's a cost to being my friend. We have to grow together. We have to walk together. We have to sweat together. We have to pray together. We have to serve together. We have to win the world together. And there is always a reaching out to people. You know, the way I look at it is I have my home, which is my sanctuary. That's my place of peace. Me and my wife, we protect that. You know, if you take 10 boys and put them in a room and say, okay, I want to give you a pizza. So everyone gets 3 pieces. They all start eating, but then one guy starts to eat real fast. The other 9 are going to start eating fast too, because they don't want the other guy to eat their share of pizza, you know. And so there's people that we allow in our life that we consider family who are mature enough to be family. They're not out to disrupt or destroy. Because there are people, many people out there who we are called to minister to, who if you let them, they'll disrupt and destroy everything around them. Not on purpose, it's just they're growing up. So we keep those guys at a distance. We minister to them. We don't allow them to a place in our life to where they'll disrupt things. See, I can walk forever with 12 people, give of myself to them, and raise a healthy family, and have my prayer life, and do it for the next 50 years. Or I can spend my whole life trying to fix someone's disorder and not accomplish what I'm supposed to accomplish. When I listened to Pastor Dave's tapes, I'd have to stop because there was accountability with it. Basically, it said to me was, until you get this, there's no sense going on. Until you're living it, there's no sense going on. Knowledge does not produce maturity. God does not promote knowledge. He promotes maturity. Knowledge will help with maturity. And so I had to stop. I listened to a tape and have to stop, sometimes for a month, until it became part of me, the lifestyle, see. Discipline of praying and fasting took a little longer. I needed some convincing. That was actually a truth. We had one guy, he went back into where Jesus, you know, said, this kind comes up by prayer and fasting. And he said, no, in the original, the word fasting is not there. I said, hallelujah. I knew it all along. <You know? laughs> And so as you start to grow, what God is interested in your life is not how much you put out, but how much you're maturing. You'll hear Pastor Dave say, it's not the prayer time that he fellowships with what the change. What that means is whether you pray 3 hours or 5 hours, he's not any more pleased with that. Where he takes pleasure is in the change that's after. See, praying in tongues does not please God. It's the actual, I am praying because I want to mature. It's the maturing that pleases him. Praying in tongues is the avenue I have. Fasting is a tool I have. Worship is a tool I have. See, these are all tools that I have to change me so I can get stronger and become more mature. I always judged a preacher. I used to judge them when they come and they'd walk in power. Say, wow, glory to God. And power was the sign, man of God, the power. And sensationalism, when you're young, you don't know the difference between power and sensationalism. You know, power is when someone gets healed. You like that. Sensationalism is when something emotionally gets going. But then when I got into the back room and began to drive a lot of these preachers, I changed how I judge a man of God. I no longer judged a man of God by how he did on the service in the sanctuary behind the microphone. I began to judge them by how they treated me when I was just a little driver. God promotes differently than the world does. He promotes you for different things than what the world does. That's why you may look at yourself and say, I've been praying and seeking God and I don't see a lot of fruit. It's because you're looking at the wrong fruit. You can't spend time praying and worshiping and fasting and in the Word and not be challenged to grow. And I was in the car with Pastor Dave and I was just asking about the Spirit and all. He made just the same statement he did in all the born-again trails. And it just dawned on me all of a sudden. Oh, I have a spirit man and a nature. And I've been preaching for 15 years. And I finally realized what being born again actually meant. And he looked at me like, how long you been with me? How long you been listening to me? And normally you'd hide it. You'd just fake it. Like, oh yeah, yeah. But it was such a revelation that my face lit up. I was like, oh, I get it. I get it. It's like, now, I taught that first service, Born Again Trail, tape number one. See, knowledge doesn't produce, knowledge is not the answer. It's just a pathway to it. Okay. And once I learned that now I've been born out of the family of Adam, that Jesus actually made a way for his father to become my father. It changed everything. I went from being a servant to being a son. I'm finding it easier to discover how the church is supposed to operate. Because I'm just looking at how a family is supposed to operate. That's how the church is supposed to operate. You have a Father. You've been born again. He is your Father. He loves you. But not only does He love you, He's interested in seeing you have victory in life. I'm worried about some of you. I'm kind of on these services that I've been preaching, just letting go, not trying to impress, just sharing out of my heart. And because I want to see me and you fulfill our calling. And I'm concerned that many of you are not going to fulfill your calling. I am going to fulfill my call. Bless God. I'm determined that whatever I have to go through, however I have to grow, whatever pride I have to swallow, I want to see my Father proud. I'm concerned that some of us are looking to a spiritual answer so we don't have to deal with ourselves. Because I've seen many people aspire to spiritual things, but not walk in love, not walk in truth. And you know those people? I've seen them rise and then I've seen them fall. Not just by the tens, by the hundreds. Get a moment of success, of what they call success. Then years of struggling because they were looking to the wrong thing as a mark of success. I remember when I was a little kid, well, not a little kid, I was just starting into my teens, late teens, and my dad wanted me to mow the yard. And I was in my room sleeping in. And I could hear him upstairs walking. And it brought irritation because I didn't want him. I couldn't just address him. See, I couldn't just approach him. Because I knew I wasn't doing, I was trying to get out of what he asked me to do. And now, I just started serving God. And quickly, I was kind of the more spiritual man of the family. I learned you don't judge how much a man of God is by how spiritual they are. Sometimes the most incredible man of God is the most practical man you know. So I heard him come down the stairs. He could hear his feet, you know, getting a little frustrated. Knock on the door. Alan, what are you doing? I'm laying in bed. And I remember doing this. I grabbed my Bible quick, opened it up on the bed. He opened the door. He's supposed to be mowing the yard. What are you doing? I said, oh, Dad, I'm, you know, I'm just praying and reading my Bible. And he backed off, said, oh. Okay, all right, that's good. That's good. Even at that young age, just learning about God, I discovered a way of backing people off. Might be different if I was actually reading my Bible or praying. We want the spiritual things to be the benefit, the fruit of who we are, but not the explanation of who we are. And every one of us here, there is a desire in you to please your Father. And every one of us and every child, there is a desire to please your Father. When God created Adam, come here, Mark. Let's say I'm God and here's Adam. Where's Eve, by the way? Not here. So let's pretend Eve is here, sitting in the chair, and I got Adam. It says they walked and talked in the cool of the day. I'm sure they held hands. That's what I do with my son. Even if he doesn't want to, hold my hand. No, give me that hand. They walked and talked in the cool of the day. Now here's what it says, or doesn't say they did. They walked and talked all day long. Adam, talk to me. How you doing? Good. Yeah, tell me you love me. Tell me you love me. Worship me. Yeah. Oh, thank you. Thank you. I love you too. How's your day going? What have you been doing? I've been walking and talking with you all day. Oh, there's Eve. Oh, don't look at Eve. Talk to me. Talk to me. Talk to me. Talk to me, 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 talk to me. So God walked and talked with Adam. And he said, don't look at Eve, don't leave Eve alone, talk to me, talk to me. Tell me you love me, tell me, talk to me, talk to me, worship me. Talk to me, talk to me, thank you, thank you. See, what he said he did was he walked and talked with Adam in the cool of the day. And then he left him alone so he can enjoy Eve. See, in God, there's a spectrum of love that goes the same in our families as the love of a mother to the love of a father. The love of a mother, thank God for women. When my son hurts his knee or something, he doesn't come to daddy. He goes right for mama. I'll even try to intercept him sometimes as he's running through the door. I'll try to come to daddy. I'll hold you. I want mama. I'll grab him. Mama, mama. There's a love of a mama that will put up with you, will accept you and give you love no matter what you're doing. If I listened to my mama, I'd be living right in her house right now. I could have me, my wife, and my kids living on her couch, and she'd be, what do you want for breakfast? But not my dad. A love of a mama has to do with giving you so much love that you're going to learn how to love back. See? A woman's love, a mother's love is there to pour love into you so you learn that love is real. Love is available. Love is always there. I know in my rough upbringing, there's one thing I could tell you is I have a mom who loves me. Even today, I could call, I mean, she would, if I called her and said I have a need, she would send it to me. I had to stop her from sending me money when I was in Bible college. I said, Mom, I got to learn how to do this myself. But there's more in you than just the love. There's more desire in you than just to be loved of a mama. See, a love of a father. Well, let me rephrase. I'm trying to say this right because I don't want to. There's another aspect of love that says, I'm not interested in you loving me. Or liking me, I'm interested in you growing up. Hello, Dad. When God walked with Adam, he took as much pleasure watching Adam enjoy life, watching Adam enjoy his family, watching Adam have dominion over the garden and enjoying exploring life. And he'll do the same for you and me. There are seasons where we need all the love a mama can give. We need that aspect of God's love. I know I needed it for so long. I didn't know there was love available in church like there is here, where they won't hurt you. Even if you try to make them, they just won't do it. I needed that. I need that now, that safety to know I can fail and not be abandoned. That I could fail and not be rejected. But as we grow, he expects more out of us. He expects fruit to come forward. And he won't be tricked like my dad was tricked. I'm reading the Bible and praying. It won't work on him. See, when you get a man, a father, like me and my son, he'll come tell me he loves me. And I like that. But you know what I like more? I get more pleasure out of my son. My daughter's still, she's two, so she's still, runs around and falls down and... But Harrison, he's five. I take more pleasure. I mean, I'll have this grin on my face. I'll just start tearing up a little bit when he accomplishes something he never did before. That's where I take pleasure. We were trying to climb up a slide the other day. They had one of those little rock walls on these slides. And he got about halfway up and he froze. I said, "Okay, Daddy, pick me up." I said, I'm not picking you up. No. Just put your hand right there by my rear, right there. And then lift me up." And he's frozen on this little rock wall. It's about 8 feet tall. "Just push me up." I said, "No, I'm not going to do it." I said, "I'm here, and I won't let you fall, I promise. But I'm not going to do this for you." And he froze on the wall. He said, "Well, push me up." I said, "No, I'll take you down so you're safe and let you start again. But I'm not going to do this for you." And he froze. And I let him down. He tried again. He froze halfway, same spot. "Put your foot there and your hand there. Now lift." "I can't do it. I can't do it." "Yes, you can. You can so do it." So finally, he inched his way up with my coaching. And when he got to the top of that thing, he turned around with this big grin. I was down there with a big grin. "You did it! I did it!" He was so proud. I was so proud. In that moment, he was a son. I was a father. See? Your father's no different. You start looking at your life and there's areas of weaknesses. Sometimes we try to focus on our specialty so we don't have to deal with our weaknesses. The rich man came and said, "What do I need to do?" Jesus looked at him, scanned his life, and found his weakness. "So give all your money to feed the poor." Why? Because that was the one area that was going to destroy him. He wanted him to deal with his weakness. Peter was walking along and he had a vision. He said, "You can eat all this. It's okay." Why? Because that was an area of his life that was going to ruin his future. And he had to learn that the Gentiles had a place. Just like the Jew. you're going to have to face yourself, or you won't see your calling fulfilled. Gary said, I like to say Gary and Dave because, and Tim, because they're the pastors of this place. I believe that just being around them has taught me so much about life and ministry. Gary said, boy, I think we were on the phone one day. He said, boy, I hate this dying thing. Because when you see something, when the Holy Ghost brings something up to you to face, he's not trying to get you to specialize. Oh, let's be specialist raising the dead and healing the sick people. God will never take you there until you become a specialist of love first and holiness. See, there we have when I was 18 and studying for my final exam, I went to study with a friend of mine, and he was a doctor's son and a nurse's son, and we sit down to study, and I was raised, you know, no bedtime, no wake up time. Did you see my pictures of my early years for the photographing of the school picture? My hair's out to here. And at 18, we tried to study for our final exam, which was worth 50% of our grade. And I'd study for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, and my mind would need a break, so I'd go down and get a Coca-Cola and come back, and then I would study for another 5-10 minutes, and then my mind would need a break, so I have to go leave the room. And that sucker, he studied for hour after hour after hour. And at that moment, I realized that I had a dysfunction in me. A disorder, an out-of-order thing in me. And I had wished that my mom and dad would have beat me in a good way and made me sit down and study and learn how to have that in me. But it wasn't in me. It wasn't there. At 18, I realized that I had something in me that was going to cause me to fail in the future. When you're 18 years old, if you don't fix it, no one else will. When you're 7 and 8, your parents can fix it. When you're 18, your life's your own. And so every one of us, when we look into ourselves, you will find multitude of things out of order. May not be your fault that they're there, but the fact is they're there. And if you don't get rid of them, no one else will. And one of the dangers of having access to such wonderful revelation is we can think we're maturing, but really we're just gaining in knowledge. The transformation process brings accountability. See, we're not here just to learn. We're not part of this message. God brought you here into the message of prayer and fasting, into the purity. This message, I don't know, I guess we call it the message, but it's not just praying, it's not just fasting and worship, it's love. Brothers and sisters together, walking with one Father, with one head, Christ. No one ruling over each other. The message is all of this. Why are you here? Why are you listening to this message? Because the prayer center isn't just here, it's all over. It's because he found something in you where he believed you can make it and fulfill your calling. I honestly believe he looks at a person and he traces into their future and sees how much they're willing to follow him into maturity. And when he finds that they're only a 30-fold seed, or a 60-fold seed, or a 100-fold seed, he uses them where they're at and cuts them loose. Because I know people who, They don't know much about who God really is. But they're hearing God. They're doing a great work for the kingdom of God. And you know God's involved. I believe when he looks into your future and sees someone who's willing to come to the place to be a hundredfold return on his seed, that he'll grab you by the hand and walk you into that place of mortification. Only because you're willing to go there. I said, God, why am I so blessed? I've been part of incredible ministries, been blessed in where, who I've been around and what I've been around. And why am I so blessed this way? All my ministry jobs that I've had, or even preaching that I've done, there's always been more people more qualified than me. Why am I the one? I said, how come I'm so blessed to be able to go with you this way? And he spoke to my heart and said, because of their hunger. I said, well, I appreciate that, but how come you gave me hunger and not to all my friends who are failing? He said, I didn't give you hunger. He said, that's what I found in you that allowed me to pull you on this road. If you are even listening to the messages of the person, he found something in you. And he believes in you. We can do this. We don't have to fail. But don't be surprised when you pray in the Holy Ghost and he starts asking you to deal with yourself instead of with the guy down the street. That guy down the street needs to get raised from the dead or healed or ministered to. Yes, but let me deal with you first. Because one of the dangers that we do is when he comes knocking and asks us to mow the yard, we pull out spiritual things. But I'm praying. See, I know my son, if he were to come up to me and say, I love you, I appreciate that. Harrison, did you clean your room? Harrison's a negotiator. His favorite word is but. Okay, but. No. Don't say another word. Okay, but no. I don't want to hear it. Go do what I tell you to do first. And then you can talk to me. Okay, but I. No. I'll walk him to his room. You're supposed to clean your room now. This is room cleanup time. I'll sing with you. Clean up, clean up. Everybody does a share. And he'll start cleaning his room. So now after you do what I ask you to do, then you can go on to what you want. Our Father's no different. See, it's for a father. Now, I'm talking about me. I don't have the, you know, the whole image of father. I'm just saying from my aspect as a father to a son or as a son to my father. Saying I love you to my father didn't get the same result as it did to my mother. My mama, that's all I had to say. But Dad, there's something in that father that says, you'll get my love, but you won't get my approval until you do what I told you to do. See, and I was fighting with my father to give me not acceptance, but approval for just being nice. But the love of that father was more interested in me growing than he was with me loving him back. The love of the Father says, I love you so much that even if you don't like me, I'm going to make you grow up. Because I take more pride in watching you accomplish things than I do with your words. Am I preaching okay? Let me see if I can find this. John chapter 14. Verse 50. It says, if you love me, what? Keep my commandments. If you love me, you'll do what I ask of you. Do you know that worship is 20% words and 80% action? This thing is bulletproof, right? This. Yeah. Worship, true worship, is 20% words and 80% action. My little daughter at 2 already knows how to work her daddy. And when she does something she's not supposed to, and she knows she's not supposed to do it, the first thing that comes out of her mouth, I love you. Well, I love you too, honey, but you're going to do what you're supposed to do. See, the action of worship for a father says, the love that I receive from you isn't your words, is as if you do what I ask you to do. Maturity. He is more interested in you growing because he takes pleasure in watching you conquer that thing. Peter, when they took Christ up to the cross, he ran. And they said, are you with Jesus? You're with him. No, not me. Not me. Cuss. No, watch this. Cuss. See? Not me. Can't be me. Every disciple ran except for one disciple. Who was that? John. All the disciples ran from persecution for the sake of their life except for one who wasn't afraid. That was John. And then they took him. They crucified Christ. John was there with all the women. It's all the women standing there right with Jesus, not afraid of dying. And one man, John. Then, the end of the book of John, Peter and them were on the boat fishing, and Jesus walked on the shore, and they realized it was him, and Peter jumped in the water and swam, and everyone else rowed, probably beat him to the shore. I said, Peter, if you love me, you'll feed my sheep. Then he said, after saying that 3 times, he said, Peter, you're going to go when you're old. Young, you got to go where you wanted to. When you're old, they're going to gird you up. And they're going to take you. And he was talking about Peter being martyred for the gospel. Do you know that every disciple was martyred? Except for one. John. And I said, God, why was that? Were you punishing the other disciples for running? And he taught me real quick. See, it wasn't punishment. He was honoring him with the ability to face the thing that defeated him before but this time to conquer it. Peter ran when he was supposedly tough. Then God honored him with another challenge to face it. And this time he looks death square in the eye, said, "Hang me upside down. I'm not afraid." That wasn't punishment. He was honoring him with the privilege that when he walked into the pearly gates of heaven, he said, "That thing defeated me before, but I beat it again." And he'll do the same thing for you. Everything you failed in the past, if you'll follow him, you'll get to face it again. "Well, I don't want to face it." No, and most people don't. And most people live their whole life avoiding things. But we have a Father who is all Father. And he, if you follow him, it's accountable. That's why I had to quit listening to messages, because I was hitting hit with myself. And there was a accountability to this message that said, don't just listen, you have to do. No sense going on to the next thing until you conquer the first thing. Look, if I were one of those fancy preachers, I'd bring out a bunch of building blocks here today. And I put one up here, big old square building block. And then I'd take the next one, I'd put it on it, but I'd put it just almost halfway, so it's still on, but just a little off balance. That's my second building block. Then I'd take my third one, and I'd put it up over here, this side, just to try to balance it out. And then I'd take my fourth one, and I'd do the same thing. And what would all of you be telling me? I said, "Now, after I build this, I'm going to stand on it." You'd be saying, "Okay, hey, preacher, put them right on top of each other the correct way." Why? Because you can't build something solid unless the foundation is straight. And what many of us attempt to do, either through being purpose-driven or by being spiritualist-driven, there's no difference between feeding the poor or prophesying. It's still both of those can take you off course. We're trying to force God to promote us before we deal with our disorders. "I don't want to deal with that part of my life, but I'll let you use me in this part." Why won't you promote me, God? Why won't you promote me? Why won't you promote me? Because in the closet you got something hidden. You got your prayer closet, then you got your not going there closet. And every time you go in the prayer closet, this door opens up to your not going there closet. And you say, no, I'm not going there. And he won't make you go there until you're ready to defeat it. Until you're ready to face that thing. See, that's why prayer in tongues, I call it the equalizer. It equalizes everything. We're all equal. Doesn't matter where you start today, how many issues you look at yourself and say, "Oh, I'm a mess." Doesn't matter. If you'll spend time with him, and he will bring up the things in you that are out of order and ask you to conquer them. And he'll hold your hand and he'll say, "Now, I won't let you fall, but I'm not going to do it for you. Because you have to conquer this. You have to say, I'm not going to do this anymore. You have to do whatever it takes in your life to defeat this." When I first decided to pray, I started praying and did really good for a couple years, and then busyness started to take me out. Expectations of ministry load was taking me out, and probably I allowed that to happen because it was a good excuse not to pray. Because you kind of hide yourself in that. And so I made my mind up, okay. I fell out of prayer for a little season. I said, that's it. Started Monday, 6 a.m., I'm back in there. So I did, but it was hard. And the workload was hard because I didn't just pray. I still had to do everything else. And I remember I called up Travis because he was praying with me. And I said, I'll make you a deal. I'm going to call you at 5 in the morning one day. Then you call me at 5 in the morning the next day. And I'll challenge you that we'll both get there to pray. I said, okay. And if you don't show up, I'm going to call you a girl. And he said, well, okay, well, I'll call you a girl too. And so we'd call each other 5. Are you getting up? Yeah, I'm getting up. So you ready to change the world? Yeah, I'm ready to change the world. Sometimes we think changing the world is being famous or, you know, being on stage. But really, the way to get to changing the world is changing yourself first. One day at a time. So I knew that if I missed, he'd call me a girl. And I'd call him if he'd miss, say, you wearing your skirt today? See, for a season, I needed that. I needed that to get a discipline in me to pray. Whatever you have to do when a challenge comes up to face it, do it. It's your weakness. He's not going to put you on his back and climb up that rock wall with you and let you go and say, oh, good job, because you both would be smiling, but there would be emptiness on the inside of you because you didn't accomplish anything. I'm preaching good. He takes so much pleasure when you start to conquer things in your life. He takes more pleasure as a father in that than he does with your words. Think about your dad. Or you're supposed to do the dishes when you're a kid, or supposed to mow the yard if you're young, and you don't do it. Would he enjoy you sitting on his lap and saying, I love you? Or would he say, oh, I love you too, now get your rear in there and start doing your job? He's not someone your service pleases. He's no longer God to you as an Old Testament saint. He is your father. And he is interested in you being healed. And he's first thing he did for me was he made me know I was safe to fail and he wouldn't reject me. He made me know that I was safe to never grow, to never pray, to never change, and he would still love me exactly the same. But then after a season of being healed, I started to feel a little nudge here, and something in me wanted to please him and not just serve him. See, a servant serves to try to please the master, but a son, the way you please your father is you grow and mature. And the devil comes, says, I'm going to take your finances. I'm going to take your family. And you run behind your daddy. It's okay when you're 4. But when you're 18, your dad's going to say, okay, boy. Right cross to the chin. That's where you knock him out right there. Go ahead. No, you do it. I'm not doing it. You go there. Just right, make a fist like that. And sneak up on him and show him your left hand like this. And then hit him with your right hand. See, he wants you to face it. And he'll give you everything you need to do to win that fight. Can you imagine living your whole life full of insecurity and fears. Not much hope. Life does not be life until you conquer things. You start to enjoy life when that thing that used to make you angry, you run across it and it doesn't make you angry this time. Say, I've changed. We're not just on a road to miracles. And we can't hide behind spiritual things to please Him. Because there's a part of you, inside of you right now, there's a part of you that's going to feel awesome when you conquer that thing that's been defeating you all these years. And there's a part of Him that's going to be so proud of you because you grew up and didn't let it win again. Every disciple had to face death, the very thing they ran from. Because they followed Him into it. Because He was honoring them. When they got to heaven, they said, everything that the devil threw at me, I defeated. Including the thing that defeated me before. We're going to change the world. And we won't just have to offer miracles and signs and wonders. Because most of the world likes that. But the most of the world also needs love, maturity, gentleness, kindness, goodness. You can't fake God out and make Him proud of you because you're offering services, whether it be in the natural or in the spiritual. I don't know if my son, when he tries that, Harrison, you're supposed to mow the yard. I'm praying. Well, you're going to pray and mow the yard at the same time. Here, I'll tape a Bible to your lawnmower. You can't worship God just with words. Not because of any other reason than for you, you need that. You need to make Him proud. Not just by your service, but by your actions. You need that. It's in you to please Him. And that's how you please Him. Okay, see you in 30 minutes.